This train is inbound.
From Sector C.
My crime is that of outsmarting you.
If you have not yet submitted your identity to the retinal clearance system,
communications interface online.
You're not dealing with AT&T.
Automatic medical systems engaged.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Defensive weapon selection system activated. Have a very safe day.
From San Diego, California, I'm Drake Anubis.
And from rainy Florida, I'm Enigma.
Is it raining there, really?
Oh, yeah. It was raining earlier. I don't know. I haven't been outside today.
Oh, so it's not raining now. So what you meant is from the place where it sometimes rains.
How about from the place where it was raining earlier?
Oh, okay, that's better.
Yeah, I'm still stuck inside playing StarCraft 2 today, so.
You still play StarCraft?
I play StarCraft 2. It just came out.
They made a new one?
Yeah, StarCraft 2. It's sweet.
StarCraft 2. Is it any fun? Is it good? You like it?
Yeah, I like it. If you like RTSs, it's very good. If you don't, eh.
You know, my problem with StarCraft is that you get these guys who, like, all they do is play StarCraft, and they had this routine down where it's like, you know, build orders and such, where you just can't beat them because they're just so fast, and they know exactly what to do, and it's like a giant logic flow chart.
Yep.
And it's just not fun.
Yeah, well, if you're good at it, it's great fun. If you're not,
I'm not good at it.
It's not so much. But, yeah, I was playing the single player today, which probably get hate mail for since, you know, everybody plays multiplayer.
There's a single-player version in StarCraft? I didn't even know it was there.
Yes, there is a campaign mode. I use it to learn the class, because otherwise I'll get wiped in Battle.net seriously hard.
Oh, man, you know a game I got sucked into for, like, 3 weeks that always reminds me of StarCraft is a Civilization, the multiplayer online version? Because the games last for, like, 4 hours.
Yeah, the games are really, really long.
So you play 3 games, and now all of a sudden it's Wednesday, and you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, exactly. I've been playing the multiplayer since about 4 o'clock.
Haven't been to work in 3 days.
just got off before we were recording the show, so.
Got a bunch of those messages from, like, Bill Lumberg, like, hey, sorry you didn't come in. Beep. Next message. It's not a half day or anything.
And for those of you who are too young to know the reference, it's Office Space.
No. Everyone gets the Office Space reference. There's no age limit on Office Space.
No, there is, you know, been a while ago.
It's not like, but it's such a great movie. It's a classic, especially in the IT space.
It is. But some of our listeners may not be in the IT space.
Okay. You know, I'm talking about web cracking tonight. I hope all of our listeners are remotely in the IT space.
Yeah, but there's some that are just like Linux hobbyists that don't actually work in field.
But I said I was in the IT space before I was even old enough to have a job, per se.
Yeah, that's true. You were like 14 when I met you, so that's
true. In the IT space.
Yeah, what are we talking about? The IT space. Wow. The IT field. Okay. So what have you been up to, Drake?
IT in space. Not much, actually. I've been working on such, and mainly just I made the new comment system for the show site and prepared stuff for tonight.
Sounds like a blast.
Mostly fact-checking, but I thought we would talk about web cracking tonight. How do you feel about that?
I'm okay with that.
Good, because if you're not okay with it, we'd have a serious problem, because that's all I prepared for.
Okay, all right. So go on with your web cracking.
Well, I should say that I'm not going to go into how to, because I've heard podcasts where someone like reads off a sheet like, oh, okay, you want to type in error snort, flag S, flag W, flag 4, you know, I'm not going to do that. I want to go into why it's possible, not how it's possible, because you can look up a tutorial online and such.
So kind of like concepts versus the actual practice.
Sure. And I thought this is actually really interesting, and mostly because I know a lot about this and only had to look up dates and facts, so it's very easy for me. I just have a back of an envelope here. But let's knock out the basics. WEP is just a wireless security standard. When you set a password on your wireless network and it asks you, do you want to use WEP, WPA, WPA2, appreciated key, blah, 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 those are all wireless standards. And, of course,
what does WEP stand for?
WEP stands for, you know, a lot of people will tell you that it's Wireless Encryption Protocol, and it's not. It's actually Wired Equivalent Privacy, because when WEP came out in 1997, they were so confident that it was going to work so great that they said that the privacy provided by WEP was comparable to that of a traditional wired network, which is an absurd thing to say, but that's what they said. The problem, like most of you probably know, is that WEP is horribly insecure because it's very easily defeated, and because of the way it's designed, it's possible to figure out what password was used for a given network, and because we're doing cryptographic stuff, that's called cracking. So WEP is insecure because it's you can crack WEP. That's what we're going for.
Mm-hmm.
So I just very briefly, I'll go over the rise and fall of WEP. It was introduced in 1997. We went over why they call it WEP. In 2001, researchers at Berkeley and a consulting firm published a very famous paper, which formed the basis of the attack that's known today. And then within a few months after that, the IEEE, which is the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Yeah, but you've heard the IEEE moniker before, yeah, of course. It's branded on, like, FireWire and such.
Mm-hmm.
They established a task force to solve the problem, and in just 3 years, they came out with a new standard for WPA, which stands for, actually, Wi-Fi Protected Access. It's almost a recursive acronym, like WINE is. But after that, WPA 2 was officially released, and it was declared that WEP had been depreciated because it failed to meet its security goal of being equivalent to that of a wired network.
Which, again, is absurd because
I just think it's hilarious. That's like saying that, I don't even know what that's like saying. It's just really dumb.
Yeah, because you can never be as secure as a wired network because of the whole nature of no wire.
Yeah, of sending your data through, of broadcasting your data through the air has some inherent security problems with it.
Yes, it does.
But, so what is WEP exactly? Right, like if you had a magic WEP box and data was flowing into one side and nonsense was coming out, how is it creating that nonsense? And furthermore, if you spun the magic WEP box around and nonsense flowed in and data came out, how did it, reassemble that meaningless data, into usable data? Well, that's what I'm hoping to explain tonight, and it gets extremely technical. So if you know the basics, just stand by, and hopefully you'll get served later in the evening. If not, then, well, you can bite me, because this is all I know. But the main part of WEP is something called a stream cipher. And when your data goes in, it gets manipulated by the stream cipher, which makes your data unreadable. That's the confidentiality part. And the best way I thought of to describe a stream cipher was it's kind of like shoving a potato through a French fry cutter. Data goes
and
in one
just
side.
Just to interrupt you for a second.
Go ahead.
I think it's cool that you put my confidentiality term in your little thing there, even if you didn't mean to, from last week.
You're such a bitch sometimes.
I am. So continue.
You know, I got an email from, and I'm going to mention this now, even though we're going to talk about feedback later, but what's his name? Was it Diablo Marcus who made fun of you? Someone made fun of you for getting your facts wrong about the retina scanning thing, specifically related to pregnancy.
He didn't make fun of me getting my facts
he
wrong.
He said you were dumb, that you were ill-prepared.
He did not. You forwarded me that a message that you did not say that.
I got to start rewriting those emails before I forward them to you.
Yes, you do. Anyway. Continue.
So great. I like to describe the stream cipher as a French fry cutter. You just shove a bunch of stuff into one side, and it cuts it up into these neat little cryptographically secure French fries. And I suppose if you want to follow the French fry cutter example, if you spin the stream cipher around and put the French fries back in, it will reassemble back into a potato. That's essentially what the cipher is doing. Now, when you give your wireless network a password, what you're really doing is you're kind of setting the dial on the cutter to a certain number. And only machines that are dialed into that number can correctly cut and reassemble your data potato. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So a practical example would be, let's say your laptop and your router both support WEP, and this was, you know, 5 years ago and WEP was cool. Actually, more like seven. So they both had the magic stream cipher potato cutter machine. And when your router sends a web page to your laptop, it pushes the page through the stream cipher, which creates the neat little nonsensical chunks. The chunks are transmitted as data packets, arrive at the laptop, and your laptop reassembles them using the stream cipher, and the web page pops out the other side.
And it's kind of like the equivalent of having a private public key pair.
It's very much like that. It's just it's basic cryptography for that matter. So if you understand cryptography, you're probably bored out of your mind. But just stay with me, I promise. Unless of course you understand the RC4 cipher, in which case you can stop now. But the important thing to note is that as we briefly touched earlier, is that your wireless router pushes data out in all directions. When you're 20 feet to the left, it will send data to the left and the right when it's broadcasting something. So it's a radius, not a straight line of sight. I've actually met people who don't understand that, which kind of confused me. Like, how do you think the data is working? Like, is it going through your house and turning corners? What is wrong with you? But no, it's a radius thing. And anyone in the radius can actually pick up what you're doing. Now, usually what happens is that if you have your neighbor's laptop or whatever, it's made to ignore any packets coming from access points it's not associated with. But you can put your wireless card into a mode called monitor mode. I'm not going to go into wireless modes, but there's like three or four of them depending on who makes your card, five in some cases. And what monitor mode does is it records everything that it can hear, regardless of whether or not it's addressed to that particular laptop. So this is called running a sniffer when you have your card in monitor mode and you're recording things. And it's also referred to as a capture packet. It's basically you're just capturing all packets without discrimination.
And that's how Kismet and Wireshark and all of those...
Yeah,
NetStumbler was the... what I was looking for there.
You know, I'm not entirely certain how NetStumbler works, because with Kismet and you put your card in monitor mode, it will disassociate from whatever access point you're on. NetStumbler does it without disassociating from whatever you're connected to, usually, I think.
I haven't used it in a while. It's very noisy.
You know what always bugged me? There's a book by Daniel... There's two books, actually, but there's one book by Daniel Suarez called Demon, which is a great book to read. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a hacker book. Unnecessarily technical, but it's a very fun read. And everyone in the book uses NetStumbler, and I have never really met a hacker who uses NetStumbler unless for whatever reason they don't have Linux installed.
Well, actually, Stank, when he did his wireless thing for the Discovery Channel, he used NetStumbler and Kismet. Just so.
I don't like NetStumbler.
I don't either, because one thing with NetStumbler is very noisy, and I think it does attach to the access point, or it hits the access point. The Kismet does it passively. So NetStumbler is very noisy when it comes to logs and things.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I have to look into that, but... Anyway, point being that it's possible to record data packets just flying through the air, and the idea behind WEP is that because your neighbor doesn't have your password, he can't actually unscramble the packets that he's receiving, so theoretically it's harmless for him to receive them because he can't decrypt them. So,
right.
And it's important to note that if he was able to decrypt them and he had your WEP key and could get on your network, it's not like he could just, it's not just about stealing your bandwidth. There are all kinds of fun things to do once you're on a wireless network that doesn't belong to you. It's almost like a rhyme for a reason. Like,
yeah.
There's a bunch of these, like, little proof of concept applications. One of my favorite ones, I can't think of the name of it. It's like a little Perl script. But it's essentially a man-in-the-middle attack where you go between the, your target machine and the router, and it will intercept all web traffic, take all the images, flip them, like, horizontally, do, like, an image transformation, and then send them along. So whenever you're browsing the web, all your images are upside down.
You can do that with, EtherCAT filters, too. Iron Geek's got a,
Oh, really?
Tutorial on it. Yeah, he did it for one of his talks.
Oh, man, you know what he doesn't have? He doesn't have a button for the site on his site.
Yeah. Get off me. I haven't done that yet.
Another
cool application, just to get into your cool applications on a wireless network that isn't yours, there's a program called DriftNet, and do you know what it is?
Yeah. I know about it because you were talking about it once, and I can't remember where.
Yeah, and basically, for those who don't know, it's a application that looks for just pictures, just JPEG images. I think it does more than that, but just images. And it will display them to the screen, and you can also get it to log them, save them. But
Was your thesis or something, wasn't it?
No, I used it actually at the correctional facility I used to work at for... monitoring. I worked at a juvenile facility, and we had to log, you know, internet traffic. And I used it just to see what they were browsing, because we had youth that would go out to the internet and surf porn. And, yeah, I had some interesting images, but I digress.
Did you do filtering or just monitoring?
I did filtering. I actually, on the student network, we had a student network and a staff network. On the student network, we did whitelisting, where they only could go to, I think it was like 200 sites.
Only the approved porn sites?
That were, well, the stupid firewall would allowed us to only, I'm going way off topic, but the stupid firewall would only allow us to domain filter. So basically, I could limit it to the domain, and like, for example, CNN.com is, you know, harmless, right? What do you think is linked to CNN.com that could be potentially bad for, you know, young boys?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
SportsIllustrated.CNN.com.
Oh, that's...
More specifically, the swimsuit issues.
Oh, I hope we never have kids.
That were up on every single... Well, I walk into
I'm surprised you're not some classroom. Catholic village.
No, I walk into a classroom, right? And I see everybody's desktop background is a swimsuit model.
Oh,
and
I'm okay, like, yeah, that's actually... Yeah, this is, yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah, this is going away. And then I limited their background. They couldn't change their background anymore.
That's just obnoxious. People will take, like, the thumbnail and then stretch it to fit the weird aspect ratio of the monitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh God, I hate the. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So going back here.
Yeah, we've established that you don't want other people on your network because that's bad. So it's not just about stealing bandwidth. But that's hardly the point because no one uses WEP anymore. It's just never mind. But
you'd be surprised how many WEP, how many people use WEP.
I wouldn't call it surprised. I'd call it disappointed.
Well, you gotta realize that, you know, WEP is good enough for. In my opinion, WEP is good enough for home use.
That's like, a deterrent, like just to stop your stupid neighbor from getting in. Yeah, that's reasonable.
Basically, it's, you know, locking the door on your way, you know, in.
Yeah.
To your apartment.
Like if you have an apartment complex, you should probably use WEP versus nothing. But
yeah, and it's keeping honest people honest. Because if you're going to go as far, as to break a WEP key, you A, know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah,
that's and good. B, you're attempting to do something probably bad.
I love those like keeping honest people honest phrases. Like my favorite phrase is trust but verify.
Well, it's like you know port scanning. It's just like knocking on the door. It doesn't mean I'm going to go through the door. It just means I'm checking the lock.
Yeah, but the WEP cracking is more like, you know, duplicating a key to your house. I'm not going to use it. I just wanted to have a key to your house.
Or busting down the, you know, or picking the lock on the door.
Yes.
I just wanted to see if I could do it.
You know, I've actually done that before, and that would have been my defense, too. But actually, you know, my defense for any, like, place you shouldn't be, and this is always good, especially if you're at a theme park or something, because theme parks, most people don't know, but theme parks have these massive underground tunnels where all the machinery is, and you can, like, wander around. If you just say you're looking for the bathroom, no one ever says anything to you. If you say, like, I got lost, or I'm looking for a friend, or I just wanted to explore, you'll be, like, arrested by park security. But if you just say I'm looking for the bathroom, they go, oh, yeah, it's that way. It's amazing. It's like the world's greatest cop-out. I'm convinced that you could like break into the, you know, Oval Office and just say you're looking for the bathroom, and they'd be like, "Oh yeah, it's over there."
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get away with that. But continue with your little WEP discussion.
Okay. So to understand why this is possible, and this is where it starts to get fun and technical, is you have to understand what a stream cipher is and what it's actually doing. So, if you don't, okay, let me explain this. The stream cipher scrambles data using a password that you set, and the way it incorporates that password is interesting. Let's look with a more basic example. Let's talk about like ROT13, for example. ROT13 is a very trivial encryption. It stands for rotate by 13. It's the basic idea behind like decoder rings. You know, kids in like elementary school who can't even spell cryptography will send ROT13 messages to each other because it's kind of fun. I once heard it described as being like the internet equivalent of a magazine that prints the answer upside down. It's just kind of a little thing, but I lost my place. Oh, Route 13 is where you shift the letters in the alphabet by a given number of places, so... what are you doing over there?
What? I'm not doing anything. Sorry. You can cut that out.
It's just... okay.
My fault.
Man. Not a problem. I'm just curious what that noise is. But Route 13 is when you shift the letters in the alphabet by a place. So, like, Route 1, for example, would make A equal B, B equal C, C equal D, and so on. Route 13 is special because the alphabet has 26 letters, and to shift by 13 can encode and decode the same message. If you move A 13 places, it becomes N, and if you move N 13 places, it becomes A. In the cryptographic world, this is actually called a cipher that is its own inverse. That doesn't usually happen. You don't usually have the exact same cipher encrypting it. Well, I should probably check that statement. But at any point, Route 13, the 13 is what we call a key. Because everyone can know how to do the rotation, the actual algorithm. But unless you have the number 13, you don't know how many letters to rotate by, and the message is still unreadable. So a key is synonymous with a password when you're talking about cryptography in most cases. Of course, with Route 13, you could easily guess the code. But the idea is that good encryption algorithms are sufficiently complex that guessing the key is not impossible, but impractical, or it would require an unobtainable amount of computing power. Like, for example, Route 13 requires two digits for... the maximum key is two digits. It can be either 13 or any 1 through 26, I suppose. But a good encryption methodology has, like, 256 characters, 512 characters. If you ever hear that something is AES 256-bit encrypted, what they're saying is that it's using AES, and the key is 256 bytes long. So the important takeaway is that the strength of encryption comes from both the method and the key length. So if you have something great like AES, but it's only one key, 1 bit long, it becomes very possible to guess what the key actually was. You only have so many combinations. So the interesting problem that WEP has, and the reason that they thought it was so secure, was because WEP uses a really great stream cipher called RC4. It's the same encryption algorithm used by SSL, which protects, you know, online banking and such. And SSL has been very resilient to attacks. There are some things you can do, but for the most part, it's still a standard for a reason.
And the only way you can really... Well, I won't say the only way you can break SSL, but the only practical way you can do it is do a man-in-the-middle where you're intercepting both ends of the communication.
Yeah, and... Then the browser lights up and says that everything's red, but I think most people will actually still ignore that. I think there are some studies saying that even when you do a man in the middle, like 90% of people still continue to the site anyway.
Right.
So, and there are now you can get around that kind of stuff. Like there was a bunch of cross-site scripting things and a bunch of other things like that, but that doesn't attack SSL directly. That attacks the things around SSL. So SSL, or RC4, I should say, is very, very strong. But the reason that WEP is so bad is because it implements RC4 in a very bad way. Now, here's where things get really technical, so bear with me. RC4 is a stream cipher as opposed to a block cipher, which means that it's encrypting data on the fly. A block cipher, you'll take one chunk of text, like an email, do one thing to it, like fire it once, and it's encrypted. A stream cipher encrypts every bit that passes through it individually, and a different transformation is performed on every bit. And now it gets really technical. If the way it determines what transformation it's going to perform is by using what's called a key stream. It's kind of like a key, like a password, but it's a stream of password, so to speak. Let's go back to the hypothetical, like, Route 13 example. If you had a Route 13 stream cipher, and your key was, like, 123, it would encrypt the first letter by shifting one place, the second by shifting two places, and the third by shifting three places. And likewise, if the key cipher was the key stream was, like, 333, the first letter would be moved by three places, the second by three, the third by three, and so on. So as the stream flows in with the bits, and the operation is performed depending on the stream. Now, for RC4 to be secure, it needs an unlimited, non-repeating keystream. If you ever reuse a section of the keystream, it's possible to take the encrypted data and perform what are called XOR transformations on it and end up with the unencrypted data and calculate the string. So you have to have unique, non-repeating keystreams for RC4 to be effective. Interestingly enough, you don't have to enter an infinitely long non-repeating value when you set the password to your wireless network. It's usually just like the name of your dog, Wolfie, or something. And that's hardly an infinitely long non-repeating keystream. But we can do something to make your dog Wolfie into a non-repeating keystream by adding in what are called initializing vectors. And you hear a lot about IVs when it comes to cracking web and when it comes to cracking wireless in general. IVs are these ideally unique blocks of bits that get mixed with your password, and the result is given to the keystream. And then the IV is incremented, mixed again, given back to the keystream. So the keystream is generated by segments of your password mixed with an IV. And theoretically, because the IV is always changing, the password given to the keystream is always changing, it's non-repeating, boom, problem solved. So.
Not so much in web.
Well, as far as we know, RC4 can't be broken as long as it has a non-repeating keystream. And as far as we're concerned, web is the security equivalent of being on a wired network, unless, well, no. I suppose unless you ever had a duplicate IV, but...
But you would never have that. They would never be so secure.
No, because a duplicate IV would mean that a duplicate result combination was given to the keystream, and any repetition of the keystream, as we know, is a catastrophic failure of security. But as long as the IVs are long enough, that won't happen, because you won't have repetition. Of course, the downfall of WEP is that the IV is actually not long enough, and this does happen, and it happens a lot. You see, WEP has it uses what's called a 24-bit IV, so the IV is 24 characters long. And you think, oh, well, that's really long. How many packets are you possibly sending? Well, you have to have a different IV for every packet, practically. And on a busy network, like if you're downloading a file, 700 packets are sent per second, and each packet needs its own unique IV, practically. So just after 5,000 packets, after 7 seconds, there's a 50% probability that an IV will be reused. And worse than that, after 40,000 packets, there's a 50% chance that you can calculate the web key because you have collected enough duplicate IVs. 20,000 more packets, you have an 80% chance. 25,000 more than that, and you have a 95% chance. So in less than a minute on a busy network, you can have enough weak IVs to calculate the web key. And that's really bad for web. It doesn't even take more than a minute to figure out. And the actual calculation, by the way, happens in like 3 or 2 seconds. It's a very fast calculation. The time comes from collecting the actual weak IVs.
Right.
And the only caveat worth mentioning is that you have to have a busy network. Well, what if the network's not busy? Well,
No.
You can actually make the network more busy. What happens is... when you're connecting to a network and your laptop asks for an IP address, it does what's called an ARP request, and it asks for routing information, essentially. So what you can do is you can...
And pop quiz, what does ARP stand for?
Address Resolution Protocol.
You got it.
Yeah, bam. Take a drink on. You can send, without even being associated with the router, you can send a client a disassociation message and knock it off of the network. It will, of course, try and re-authenticate and reassociate. And when it does so, you can grab whatever it's sending. You're not entirely certain what it's sending, but that doesn't matter. You can grab it and replay it back. And every time you replay it back, the router will respond, and it will respond with an encrypted packet. And that's a legitimate encrypted packet. In fact, we only need 40,000 more, and we can break web. And you can just send an unlimited avalanche of these ARP replies, and the router just goes like a freaking fire hose. Like a... of ARP replies, and the router just goes, oh my god! As if, now some routers are smart, and or some routers allow you to configure how many ARP replies are sent per second, but still, and then you only have to wait a couple minutes, but the bottom line is that the web can be broken because the IVs are not long enough, which leads to a repetition in the keystream, which means that RC4 fails because you can take the end results and XOR them and get the web key. There you go. So, I'm hoping that anyone who thought that was too basic, is now thoroughly put in their place.
Thoroughly?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a DDoS attack, by the way, just in case someone wanted to research that.
Would it be considered? I think it's a DDoS. I'm like, I don't think it's DDoS.
DDoS.
Yeah, so that's definitely DDoS attack. Which is valuable in many, many protocols. You'd be surprised.
Yes, you would be.
But I think we should give some shout-outs to people who left us great feedback.
I would agree.
I know you have something prepared.
Yeah, for the gentleman, hold on 1 second, let me get his name right.
You did not forget Diablo Marcus' name, did you?
Diablo Marcus, yes. He pointed out that I was incorrect on the retinal versus iris scan.
He drew a picture of you on one of those hangman nooses.
He did not. he pointed out that it is the retinal scan that is the one that has the privacy concern with the pregnancy in women. Yeah. And he gave a... What was that?
I was going to say that I looked into this issue, and I could not find a single credible mention of this eye scanning technology determining if you're pregnant or not. I could find things of pregnancy damaging its ability to read, but not that it can determine if you're pregnant.
Maybe he didn't give me that.
But you know, he sent you a link to the Wikipedia article, but it didn't say that it could determine pregnancy. It just said it could be distorted.
Interesting.
Which is he drew that picture of you that said liar, liar, and had little stink lines coming off of you.
Anyway, I will research that more, but thanks for the link anyway, and he says we're amazingly more informative than Security Now.
Setting the bar high.
Yeah, we're setting the bar high, right above Security Now.
NY Bill sent us a nice message saying that he loves our show and that he listens to it on the way to work. And that's great, except that he drives 20 hours a week, so I don't know if he listens to us just to fill time or if he really enjoyed the show. But he was a nice guy. I talked to him back and forth. He sent me this great list of podcasts, too. That was really useful.
Good.
And
good.
We should mention Clat2's site, too. Clat2 has a podcast, The Bad Apples.
He has a podcast? I thought he had, like, 20.
Oh, he has the world's first Ogcast or something. I hate Og.
He is the self-proclaimed media whore, so just for the record.
You know, I have to say, I was on his site looking at it, and I'm like, oh man, you only offer things in Og, really? I'm like, because it doesn't sync with my iPod, and I'm like, okay, well, fine. And then he has an alternative codec. I go, oh, there's MP3 hiding in the background. No, he has Og, and he has Speaks. And if it wasn't a week prior to finding out about his site, I would have, like, just gone, what the hell is this protocol? But Speaks, actually, is a really cool codec, but I'm just surprised he's encoding a podcast in it.
Yes.
So
I actually had to look it up because I didn't know what it was until I saw it on his site. So
it's actually really great. I was considering it for protocols for this show because it's not bad, but we end up using it. Actually, I think right now we might be using Speaks or CBIT, one of the two. And I should say hi to Jake. Jake's really cool. You know, Jake said that he hopes we keep the show up as long as schedule permits. I don't think he understands how committed we are to the show.
How committed are you to this show, Drake?
I'm very committed, as people will find out. But I'm not the one who's talking into a Toucan Sam microphone or whatever you have going on over there.
I am not talking into a Toucan Sam microphone. Whatever, dude.
God, I hope the new microphone gets there soon. And so that's all I got for the show. Check out the site, Hack Radio. Oh, we have comments now. Go to the site and look at the comments. I'm talking to you specifically.
Yeah, and don't go to the Hacker Public Radio site and look at comments, because I haven't fixed it yet. So I have not fixed
that
yet.
You said days ago you would fix it.
Yeah, well, StarCraft 2 got in my way. So, you know, sorry to the people that have to deal with the spam on Hacker Public Radio, but you went to priority number 2.
Yeah, go to hackradiolive.com or .org. Either one works, but I like to push the .org. I think it sounds more official. But no, go look at the... I'm talking to you specifically. Go look at the comments and look at how great they are.
Okay, I will go look at the comments. I haven't been on the site in a couple of days.
Be on the site now.
I'll...
You need to see. I want you to say how great they are on air. To encourage. No, because if you say, oh, yeah, the comments are so great, no one's going to go. But if you say, oh, wow, they're actually pretty cool, people will go.
They're great, Drake.
You haven't seen them.
Hold on. Jeez.
No, it took me a while to code. I'm not good with PHP.
Super, super quick feedback would be the
No. Click on a show like you're going to leave a comment.
Oh, okay. Because I saw that feedback. The feedback there. I told you was cool. Had new comment.
Isn't that cool?
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right. It is. Still talking when the science crew